I'm Barbara Bray. Welcome to my Rethinking Learning podcast, where I have conversations with inspirational educators, thought leaders, and change agents. Hey, I'm really so excited today. I have Todd Nasloney here, and thank you, Todd, for being here.
No, thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be a part of this conversation.
Oh, this is so fun because I've been on your show. I know you and Adam. It's just been fun. But, you know, I want to just kind of give a background about you. Now, it's a glowing, don't get too blushed or anything, right? Okay. So, Todd was a classroom teacher for 7 years before taking the leap straight from the classroom teacher to campus principal in Navasota. Did I say it right? Navasota, Texas. Todd took over a struggling campus, brought in a brand new staff, and he used his creative ideas to transform a campus. Plus, he's been recognized with many, many awards, even by the White House. Really?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, my gosh. See, I'm reading all these.
Craziest moments of my life. But
oh, gosh. That's so exciting. Now, he's written one of my favorite books that you and Adam wrote. It's called Kids Deserve It. And you have a whole movement. And I can't even keep up with it. It's like grown so big. And now you have a new book coming out. And I've already started reading a little bit of it. I got a preview. You know, I can't wait to talk to you about this. This is exciting. Welcome so much, Todd.
Thank you so much. It is such an honor to be here to get to chat with you. So I'm thrilled to have this conversation.
Oh, thank you. And so I always tell everyone, I like, because this is a conversation, I try to keep it really informal, but I also like to get to know you. Can you tell a little bit about you, your family, where you live, what it's like?
Yeah. So I've been born and raised in Texas, lived in Texas all my life. I've taught for 7 years, and then I'm now in my fourth year as a campus principal, 1 year at an intermediate, and the last 3 years at elementary. All in this, my 7 years teaching was all in the same district, and my years in administration have all been in a new district, but in the same district. And so that's been a blast. I love teaching. Even though I'm a principal now, I still find myself teaching almost on a daily basis with the students that I serve. I love working with the marginalized and underserviced kids and families. And so that's always the environments I found myself in as a teacher and now as an administrator. I have found a passion in reading and writing as well over the last couple of years, which led to the creation of Kids Deserve It, as well as Stories from Web, and then the book that I just turned in the manuscript yesterday on with my best friend, Travis Crowder. He is a secondary teacher in North Carolina. And so we just finished our book, Sparks in the Dark, which is about reading and writing instruction. And so instruction on the elementary level, secondary level, and then what it can look like on a whole campus view. And so let's say my brain is tired. I am taking a writing break for a while after getting Stories from Web done and then Sparks in the Dark. But there's a lot of great stuff going on. I love what I do. I love getting to work with kids and adults and getting to travel and present some too. So it's things are really great.
Okay. I didn't know about the other book. Do you ever sleep?
I know. You know, people ask that all the time. I say, you know, this is one of the benefits of ADHD is that I can do different things and I never get tired. And no, I get tired. But yeah, I've become really good at organizing my life where there still is downtime, there still is disconnect. Yes, my phone is always on me. And my wife will attest to the fact that it feels like I'm always on my phone. But I do make time every evening just to do nothing related to education or nothing related to professional stuff. Just to catch up on my DVR or read a book or just text one of my friends or just sit and talk with my family. So I do find time to separate the two, but I'm very efficient when I work so that I can have that separation time.
Tell a little bit about your family.
So I am married to a woman named Lisette. We've been married, it'll be 6 years in April. We have two fur babies. So we've got a dog named Paris and a dog named Jet. We live in Brenham, Texas, which is the home of Bluebell ice cream. So some people in the country may know Bluebell ice cream. I think it's like the number three ice cream in the nation, but we live in the city where they make it. And so we're the only city in the country that has every single flavor. So that's our Brenham claim to fame. Even though I work in Navasota, which is about 30 minutes up the road, but it's all right outside of Houston. And so I've lived in Brenham for about, 24 years now. Been here for quite a while. Only been in education, never wanted to do anything else. I thought I wanted to be in social work when I was in high school before I thought about teaching, but I do a really poor job of disconnecting emotionally from the kids and adults that I work with. And so social work was just too heavy of a burden for me to be able to not be able to separate myself from those kind of cases. And so that's when I decided to move into education, and I've never regretted it since. Because wow. It's its own form of social work.
Well, it really is, because you become so attached to everybody. It's exactly. Just the way you are. And, you know, I hate saying this, but I don't know Bluebell. Because I'm in California. We don't have it here.
No, there isn't any Bluebell. But it is the best. That is the only ice cream that I will eat vanilla, which is actually my favorite Bluebell flavor. It's not. It's mainly in the South and on the eastern side of the United States.
Tell them to bring it out here.
I'll have them ship you some. You can order it online and ship it to your house.
Oh, well, that really, ice cream to your house? That's scary. It could sit on there until I get home or something. That could be dangerous. Oh, well, that's so cool. So do you think, was there anything when you were a student, when you were young, that you made you want to go into teaching? Was there?
Well, I mean, growing up, I always loved working with kids. That was always, I did for 13 years. I went every single summer and worked for a week every summer at a children's camp with my church. And so I loved doing that. And I hold the record for the most amount of years going and being a helper there. But when I was in high school, my junior year, our school signed up to be a pilot school for a class called Ready, Set, Teach. It's a class that I've seen other schools in other states actually do now still. And it was a class that I could take as a junior in high school to see if teaching was really what I wanted to do. So I didn't waste any time in college thinking that I wanted to teach and then having to change my major. And so once we did that, there were about 12 of us in the class. So the class made. And then my senior year, they decided to try Ready, Set, Teach 2. And so me and another girl were the only two students in that class. And what it was pretty much an internship. And so several days a week, I would, instead of going to class, I would go down to the local elementary school, and I was assigned a teacher, and I was pretty much her student teacher for that time. And so I got to get in the classroom and get classroom experience, and that's when I knew that it was what I wanted to do. And so I got finished high school in Brenham, graduated, and then Brenham ISD hired me right away as part of their Grow Your Own program. And so I got hired as an instructional aide. And so I worked 3 days a week, my entire college experience at Brenham Elementary. I was a computer aide, a fourth grade aide, a kindergarten aide. It changed throughout the 4 years that I was there. But the state of Texas at the time, I don't know if they still do it or not, but at the time the state of Texas said, if you work in a public school and are pursuing a degree as a public teacher and you are attending a public university, the state of Texas will pay for your college if you work so many hours at the public school while you go. So I got to go to college for free, which is actually one of the reasons I went to college, because I come from a single parent home where my mom actually graduated college 2 years before I graduated college. That's a little known fact. So I worked at Brenham Elementary, drove back and forth to Texas A&M University while I was working there. And it was a wonderful experience. I totally got to work from the ground up and really see what's going on in a school and learn from all kinds of people for 4 years, which is so much more than the typical college student gets to do. Because of that work, I got to bypass student teaching. And so I didn't ever have to take summer classes. I just took 16 hours a semester every semester and then ended up not working in Brenham, which was kind of defeats the whole purpose of their Grow Your Own program. But they actually offered me a job in January of my senior year of college. The teacher that I was going to be replacing, she was moving because her husband got a new job opportunity. Well, he decided last minute not to take it, so she didn't leave. And so there were no other openings that year at the school that I was working at. So I randomly was like, well, you know, my cousin is graduating too. She's a secondary teacher. She was like, you know what? There's this job fair at this town called Waller, 30 minutes away. Let's just go to the job fair. We can get some interviews. Maybe we'll get a job there. And I was like, I don't want to drive 30 minutes every day. And so I said, you know what, I'll go with you and yeah, we'll do some interviews. Well, I was offered two jobs at the job fair. One as a computer teacher and the other one as a fourth grade teacher. And so I took the fourth grade position and worked in Waller for 7 years, drove 30 miles one way every way, which isn't that bad. And now I still drive 30 minutes at my in Navasota. So clearly I like the commute now with that time to kind of chill and just listen to stuff. But yeah, it's been a blast, but it was a very unique journey as opposed to some others.
Well, you really get, to me, this is really what it should be like. Mm-hmm. I mean, you really should have job embedded experience and learning while you're going through this, you're trying to become a teacher.
I can't even imagine being a teacher and just from graduating college without all that experience.
I mean, goodness,
I see people now, especially some teachers now that I hire that are alternatively certified, and some of them have barely been in a classroom. And I'm like, oh, I'd be dying. My first year was hard enough. And I had 4 years in a school, not in charge of my own class, but still, I can't even imagine some of these kids who graduate with even less experience than that, how overwhelmed they feel.
I know. I mean, I did see that they do this in New Zealand. I went to New Zealand and the students work pre-service work in the schools, but not in high school. That's cool. And there is a program called Educators Rising. Do you know about that?
I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah. There's a program where they get a micro-credential. It's like Future Teachers of America, Future Farmers. It's like you're actually doing the work like you did in the classroom when you're in high school. So I think that idea is going to have to come back because I think work experience is a lot more important than people realize.
Yeah. And my high school that I graduated from actually doesn't even offer this program anymore
because
you have to have so many kids in a class for it to make. And it's not always, there's not always a ton of high school students who are like, I want to be a teacher. And so being able to get that class to make has been difficult. I know with the district I came from, just with the gathering interest of people who want to be an educator. Just because I think, our jobs as educator are often under siege by people who aren't in education, looking at it and going, it's not a respectable job. It's not a well-paying job. And so it's hard to convince a high school student who knows everything already that's the job to be in. It's the most rewarding job you could ever have.
Well, I mean, you and I know that, and the people that have that I talk to, I mean, it's like education means everything.
Yeah.
And it's that teacher that it means everything to that child. And so you as a teacher, fourth grade teacher, and the other teacher positions you became a classroom champions teacher.
Yes, ma'am.
What is that?
That is actually one of my favorite programs that I've ever been a part of. And I talk about them everywhere that I go because I adore the program, what it stands for, and who started it. It was started by Olympic gold medalist Steve Messler. He was on the men's bobsled team. He and his sister actually started it because after Steve won the gold, he said, I would go into schools and I wouldn't really feel like I left a lasting impact. I mean, you go there, you cheer them up, you leave, and what did that do? He said, I wanted to leave more of an impact on kids than what I was doing. So he and his sister started Classroom Champions. What it is they connect top performing Olympic and Paralympic athletes who create videos like about fair play or teamwork or goal setting. And then they connect them with schools and with kids. And so if you go to their website, classroomchampions.org, all of the videos from every athlete are on there for free. None of it costs a dime. But every spring, they open up their Classroom Champion Teacher Program, where you can be a classroom champion teacher, which is what I was. I mean, I actually have a teacher at my campus now who's been one for the last 3 years. But essentially what that is you've got to be from a Title I school. And what they do is you go through the whole application process. If selected, you get an athlete assigned to your kids. And that athlete makes the videos especially for you. They do two Google Hangouts with you during the year. You get t-shirts for all your kids. You get some technology devices. You get little wristbands. It is such a neat program. And when I was in it, my athlete was Paralympian Josh Sweeney. He fought in Afghanistan, stepped on an IED and lost both of his legs, came back to the United States, joined the men's sled hockey team. And the year that he was our athlete was actually the year of the Winter Olympics. And so we got to watch him train and practice. And then we got to watch him go to the Olympics. And he scored the only goal that the USA scored against Japan to win the gold medal.
Oh my gosh. That's exciting.
And then we submitted a video. My kids made a paper slide video telling about his life, and we actually won. And so he actually got to come to our campus and spend about a half day with my kids. And it was one of the more powerful experiences that I've had as a teacher, just getting to see a man who had been through that much and still found success and the way he talked to the kids. And I will always remember one of my kids looked at him, because, you know, I always taught my students that there is never a bad question. I want you to ask anything that's on your mind. I don't want you to think that we can't talk about something because you're scared to ask it. The only rule is your questions have to be respectful. You can't ask something rude. And so one of my kids stood up in the middle of 750 other kids in our auditorium when they got to ask questions. And he said, "Josh, are you angry you don't have legs?" And I was like, "Oh my gosh." And Josh looked at him and he said, "Not at all." He said, "Why would I be angry about something I can't change?" He said, "You know, I could wake up every single morning and hate the life that I've been given." He said, "Or I can wake up every single morning and know that today is going to be the best day that I'm going to make it." And he said, "And this gold medal around my neck right now," he said, "this would not be here had I not gone through what I went through in my life. So even when terrible things happen to you, you can still make the most of it and still find success." And for my kids and the environments they come from, that's a powerful thing for them to hear. I mean, we can tell them that all day long as their teachers, but you know, it's just like you can say this same information all day long to a kid. And when somebody new comes into their environment and says the exact same thing, all of a sudden they're like, "Oh, why didn't you say that?" And you're like, "I've been saying it for weeks." And so just for them to hear that message from him and to see this gentleman in a wheelchair with no legs, something they had never seen before, any of them, and just get to hear the way he talked about his life and what he has been through. I mean, he is one of the most inspirational men that I know. And we've had some really great athletes as a school, with my teacher that is in it now. We've had several more Paralympians. We also had our athlete last year for my teacher was Merrill Davis and Charlie White, the figure skaters who were also Dancing with the Stars champion.
Yeah.
Some of the athletes people will recognize, others they may not. But I know that Classroom Champions has also started working with Spanish-speaking athletes as well, so they could get into some more schools and work with more kids. But the program doesn't charge anybody anything ever. And just to be involved with something that is only seeking to inspire kids through athletes, I love what they stand for. And Steve Messler is one of the greatest men in the world. I adore him. He's a great friend of mine. He's been such a big supporter. And it's so weird. My wife and I laugh about this all the time. Because of social media and the connections that it builds, it's like, I can sit here and say an Olympic gold medalist is one of my good friends. It's like, that makes no sense to me. That's so weird. But Steve also, you know, he endorsed Kids Deserve It. He also wrote an endorsement for Stories for Web. He's just a great guy. And like I said, I talk about Classroom Champions everywhere because I just love what they stand for.
Well, it's a great story. And I love what he said to the kids, because you have, you said it was a struggling campus and, you know, just bringing in these amazing people who say the same thing, but it really resonates with them.
Yep.
It helps transform your school because the kids really get it that they don't have to be angry.
Exactly.
I love, this is amazing. Well, that's definitely going to put a link to that and maybe, you know, some other information, because we make a blog post along with it so everybody can get to the information. It's not just a podcast. We try to put that out there. So, you know, I do have to bring up, you wrote a children's book.
Yes, ma'am.
You're something else. Tell about that.
It's so funny because all this, I just had this conversation with Travis about a month ago, because I actually write about this in our Sparks in the Dark book. But in college, one of the classes that I was in, one of our assignments was to write and illustrate a children's book. And at that time, I did not view myself as a writer, definitely not an artist. It was one of the more stressful activities I ever had to do while I was in college. I hated it while I was working on it. And I remember sitting there going, I can't even think of a story. And I have to write this children's book and I'm going to fail this major project and they're going to hate my photos, my pictures that I draw. And so then all of a sudden one day this idea came to me about a little tree that never grew any larger than what sprouted out of the ground. And he was a spruce tree, which is why his name was Spruce. And the story is about him and just standing out from the other trees while they grew up, and they all had jobs. Like, the apple trees produced apples for the animals. The evergreen tree provided shade. I mean, there, all these trees had a job, and he was a little sprout that did nothing. And about halfway through the story, while he's sulking, he runs across a little ant named Lucy. And Lucy gets separated from her colony, and he ends up being her shade while she's trying to figure out where her friends are. And through that, they form a friendship, and they learn that regardless of your size or the way you think you may not be of help to someone, all of us play a role in somebody else's life, and all of us are important and have a job that we have to figure out what it is. But it doesn't matter what you look like, your size, anything like that, you're important. And so I wrote it, I illustrated it. I didn't know this when we were doing it, but then she made us trade them in class, and we had to read everybody's and vote on which one we thought was the best. Now, this was a Texas A&M. There were probably 150 people in the class. It was terrifying. Mine actually ended up being voted as the best by the class. So the teacher helped me get it copywritten. And so I got it copywritten my junior year of college, and then I put it in a drawer. I was like, I will never show this to anybody. I will never do anything with this. And then when I got married, my wife found out about it. I shared it with her, and she was like, you really need to look at like publishing this. So I got with the printer. I published it myself. I got it printed myself. And then I sell it online a little bit. I have a couple of copies left. But I share it with my teachers and students every year. And I go into every class and I read the story. I don't tell them who wrote it or illustrated it. A lot of them know. They're like, yeah, we know where you're getting to. This is you. We've heard this before. But with my pre-K and kindergartners, it still works. But I read the story, I talk about the message, and then I tell them, you know what? I wrote this. And I said, you know, 10 years ago, I probably would have never shared that with you. But, you know, I talk about the writing process. Now it's scary and it's hard, and there's 100 drafts you have to do of something. But the more you practice at it, just like a sport, the better you get. And how we talk about how it's important for everybody to share their writing, and everybody's a writer. You just may not feel like a writer yet, but everybody's a writer, just like we believe that everybody's a reader. And when I hear people say, well, I'm not a reader, my answer is always, yeah, just haven't found the right book. Because everybody's a reader when they find the book that hooks them. And so, I've got that book, and it's cool. I mean, I shop it around a little bit with some publishers to see if to get it like really published out there. But then life just got in the way and I backed off of it. So,
well, is it available online so I can put a link to it?
Or? There was a link on my website before my website got redone. So I don't think there's a link now, because like I said, I think I only have like 20 copies left.
Well, do you want to sell the 20 copies? Because I think you never know. We can put the picture of it. And it is really, the moral of the story is great. And I love it. So, you're very, because I can see you during this, even though it's a podcast, I can tell that you're just really excited about life. And when I saw both of you talking about Kids Deserve It, and Adam already explained how you got started and how you said, oh, it's our manifesto. We're going to get in there and we're going to write it and like that. But you're living it.
Yeah.
You're living it. And it's really powerful when you do this, because what you're doing is you're a model for the teachers, you're a model for the kids. And that's what I want to do on my show. I'm just
excited. And I appreciate you saying that so much, because, you know, when we wrote Kids Deserve It, and then when I started Stories from Web, that was always a big important piece to me, is that I didn't ever want to write or be part of anything that wasn't a reflection of what I try to do on a daily basis. Not saying that I know what the heck I'm doing every day or that I have it all together. I mean, I can tell you 10 different mistakes I made today at my school and 3 different things I forgot to do that I got in trouble for. That's why I think it's so important. And I try to do that with the books that I write, my blogs and things I share online, that I don't just share the highlight reel. I really want to make sure I share the tough parts and the struggles, because with the social media being what it is now, so many of us look at somebody who seems to be successful and think, God, my life sucks in comparison, or I just can't get my stuff together. And it's like, no, when my life looks together online, it's because I've really worked to make it look together online. I don't always have it together. There are a lot of really bad days where I'm just like, just, and especially as a principal now, it's like, I don't get the opportunity to be depressed or get the opportunity to have a bad day. It's like, Todd Whitaker said, you know, when the principal sneezes, the whole school gets a sickness. And so I've always thought about that of, you know, I drive the feeling of this school. So if I'm coming in and upset and all, then it's just going to play off on everybody. So I have to hold it together and make it be as powerful as it can for these kids. Cause like I tell my staff, the kids do not care what is happening when you go home at night. They care. What are you going to do for me when I'm right here? I need you to love me right now. I need you to listen to me right now. I need you to teach me right now. And so we have to put our personal stuff off the side and know that for those little kids that are right there in front of us, all they want is everything we can give them right now. And that is very hard as an adult to do that. But that's what makes our job so different than other jobs, is that we can't disconnect. We have to get in there and bring a smile and our best attitude every day. And then when we get in the car, then you can break down and cry, or you can go and go to Sonic after work, or go and get some cheese sticks or whatever you need to do.
Or Bluebell.
Yeah. But while those kids are there, we've just got to hold it together. And I feel like with social media, that's my job too, because there's so much negative already out there. I mean, even if you look at our politicians and the things they want to share and do, it's like, I don't want to be another voice bringing negativity. I want to bring honesty, and I'm going to bring my pains as well as my struggles. But I want to be a voice that's out there celebrating others and being positive, even when I don't feel positive. Because it's like, there's so much research that shows that if you tell yourself something, the same thing every day, your brain begins to believe it, whether it's true or not. And so waking up and feeling every day like, this is so terrible, I'm so overwhelmed, yeah, you're going to feel that way every day. But I love what Kim Bearden said. She's like my idol. I mean, I adore her. She's the co-founder of the Ron Clark Academy, wrote one of my favorite books ever called Crash Course. She's a super sweet friend of mine. But she said, you know, as an educator and sometimes as a person, you just have to fake it until you make it. And what you will find is on your worst day, when you don't want to be at work at all, and it's hard to stand in front of those kids because you're going through a messy divorce, you're struggling with a death or an illness or something like that, and you just have to get up there and just fake that energy and fake that smile, your brain and your body begins to believe that that is the way that you feel. And it plays into you going, okay, I can do this. I can keep in this path. And it's hard at first, but and it's not an effort of fake it because that's not who you are. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying sometimes you need to just trick your brain into knowing that during this time and this moment, I have to be in a great mood and the best that I can be.
Well, you are doing that. And what I like is, you know, there is a lot of negativity, and I've been pushing out a lot of things about intentional positivity and getting it out there. Yeah. And that's why I was like, I got to talk to Todd because I know he's going to bring this. And so I, reading your stories from the web, you're bringing in all these stories of people who are like that. They're sharing that.
This is the project I have been most excited about because it's so personal to me. You know, I loved Kids Deserve It. That was my baby, my first book. I did it with Adam. I'm still so proud of that and what's come from it. And Stories from Web is actually the second book in the Kids Deserve It collection. So it actually ties back in quite a bit. But when I thought about writing another book, you know, I've been given a very wide platform with my social media presence and some things that I've been afforded the opportunity to do. And I feel like if I don't use that platform to amplify the voices of others, I am wasting my platform. This is not something that's about me. I didn't want to write a book that's like, Todd's awesome, let me write that book. No. And so when I thought about a sequel, I was like, you know what? I work with the most incredible people here at Webb Elementary. I love them to death, and they are brilliant. And just like almost every educator I come in contact with, they don't believe that they are as brilliant as they are. And so I said, I'm going to write a book very similar to Kids Deserve. It's written in the same kind of style, and I'm going to share my ideas and my beliefs, but every single chapter I want to feature a story from somebody at my school that they wrote. So whether it's a classroom teacher, an instructional aide, a music teacher, the campus secretary, the nurse, the librarian. Everybody shared a story. We've got about 53 stories in there. And what came together when I read the, I still haven't held it in my hands officially, besides what I printed off my manuscript. But when I read it completed for the first time, I just sat and cried because I just thought, this is such a great opportunity that I have been given to be able to take all of these teachers at one school and allow them an opportunity to share their voice with thousands. And mm-hmm. as a classroom teacher, I would have never imagined having that kind of opportunity. But this book means so much to me, and it is so much more than an education book. We've got a chapter in there about faith and the role that faith plays in some of our lives. We've got a chapter in there called It's Okay to Grieve, which is one of the more powerful chapters in the book that just talks about how, as humans, we need to let ourselves grieve sometime, and it's okay. And one of the stories a teacher shares is about miscarriages that she suffered. Another one is about the death of her grandmother. And I share a story about my grandfather. And so there's a lot of heart and honesty. Some stories are six sentences and some are six pages. But my staff has been dying to see the finished product. And then it comes out January 24th. So they're so excited.
Well, I don't think we'll have this podcast up exactly in time, but definitely got to get a picture of the book when you get it.
Yes,
and links to it, because the stories are amazing. And you're right. I don't think anyone's ever done anything like this. So this is really a great, great idea.
And when I went to Dave Burgess, who's the publisher, that's what I told him. I said, if I'm going to do another book, I said, I want to do something different. I don't want to do what's been done. And so when I brought the idea, I was like, okay, Dave, you know all this stuff about all these people. I said, have you read a book where it's just one school getting to tell their story? I said, I want to do it in a unique way, but I think that'd be super powerful. And he said, no, I hadn't. And so, and I went all out too. Like, I hired a photographer and they took professional shots of all the teachers so we could have their photo by their stories. We're going to have a little book release party on the 24th where we rented out a restaurant. We're going to deck it all out in these decorations. And I have a giant poster size canvas print of the cover of the book where everybody's going to get to sign it. And we're going to leave that up at the front of the school. So we've got some neat things planned just to celebrate these teachers for the work and these educators for the work that they do. And I can't wait to get some feedback from the public at large. We had some beautiful endorsements from some really sweet people that we were able to reach out to that either has been to my school. Kim Bearden actually wrote the foreword to Stories from Bed. First book she ever wrote a foreword to. And she actually visited our school. And so the foreword she wrote and how personal it was, I mean, we read it as a, I'm getting emotional now, but we read it as a staff when she sent it to us, and it had us all in tears, just crying at just how much heart she put into a little foreword for our book that we wrote. So I'm so excited for the world to check out this book and to amplify the voices of people that I work with every day.
Well, I wish we could go on forever because I'm just enjoying just being here with you. And what I see is that when we get the blog post out, you've had the party, you're going to already have all these things. We're going to get pictures of everything.
And those who know me know that I post it everywhere.
I know you do.
Platform, I'll write a blog about it. You'll see it somewhere.
Oh, I know I will, because I follow you and it's been fun. That's how I kind of knew you before you even put the book out. I followed you then. So Todd, this has been, you're just really a light. And when you say you amplify the voices, you amplify the light. You let people shine, and it's really beautiful. So it's a perfect book for you. And then we'll get you back when you have the other book. Well,
there you go. We'll have to get Travis on here too, because he is brilliant. Literally, probably the smartest person I've ever met in my life. And you know, with that book, I can't even believe that I got to write with him. That he agreed to want to write something with me. He is one of the kindest, smartest people I've ever met. And his writing is just gorgeous, the kind of images he can create with words. And so it definitely made me a better writer. It was really a hard process because it's a totally different book for me. But that's why I love connecting with people and collaborating, because it grows me too.
Well, you know, that's beautiful, because it's hard to write like that. And I'm a writer, so I'm actually taking some time off to learn how to, you know, show, not tell, be able to really, it's difficult.
Yeah. So yeah.
I can't wait to read that one too. So Todd, thank you so much. This has just been amazing. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, this has been great. Thank you for listening to the Rethinking Learning podcast and my conversation with Todd Nezlony. We created a complimentary blog post that Todd shared, and there's resources and links that you might be really looking forward to, especially about his books. Please subscribe to the podcast, and you can leave a review on iTunes. You can also subscribe to my website, barbarabray.net, to receive announcements, updates, and more, so you are part of the conversation.